bold reimagining of George Eliot's classic 19th century novel Middlemarch. The original creates an engrossing and finely tuned web of individual experiences alongside significant social changes in a fictitious Midlands town. These new Middlemarch monologues by seven writers celebrate George Eliot's richly layered story reframed for the 21st century. The cast includes Mira Sayal, Henry Lloyd Hughes, Ashley Gerlock and Sinead Matthews. The drama contains strong language at times.
Chatting,
you know me.
Oh, of course,
do.
Look after some
ways. 70 them. 220.
They used to go
around the streets with banners up the hippodrome queues and all that, but you know, they're lifting
the travel this morning. We had some of the week, that was nice. Good afternoon, darling.
Good morning. You're tuned into Tipton FM. We're serving Warwickshire, Coventry, and all our beautiful towns and surrounding villages.
A great new deal, in his words, that takes back control.
Yeah, I have to eat and be cold or be warm and stuff. That's the way it is.
Some residents are reporting this has been the worst flooding of 2019, with some areas receiving a month's worth of rainfall in 2019.
Boris Johnson insists the high-speed rail link, HS2, is crucial for the country. Now, the first phase would see a 140-mile line running from Euston in London to
I don't care how old he is.
He's a sexist old egomaniac.
But you can't stop me.
How could you, Thea?
I'm going, okay? And there is nothing that you can do to stop me.
Thea? She's gone. Thea Brooke, a clever, beautiful girl with no idea how stunning she is. She could wear a bin bag and look amazing in it, and she does wear... Well, let's just say that she doesn't think much about her appearance. She thinks about causes, not much else. No interest in sex and romance at all. She's about the opposite of me at her age. No idea why I click with her. I care for her so much. But I do. It's October the 25th, 2019. 2 years since Thea and her sister Celia came to live with their uncle Arthur, Mr. Brooke. I'm Tracy Dagley. I've cleaned for him for years. And Thea's just moved out. And what's bothering us is not that she's leaving, but it's where she's going. Who she's going to. Mr. Brooke, he had a dinner party. He's a fancy to become an MP and he wanted people he thinks will help his campaign. That's what Celia said anyway. So he'd invited this middle-aged guy, calls himself Cass. Thea said he was a big name in climate emergency. The climate, that's all she ever talks about. She wants to save the planet. But Celia said this Cass was well past his sell-by date. And only got asked as Mr. Brooke reckoned it had helped to have stuff about recycling and saving polar bears in his manifesto. Celia reckoned a couple of drop-dead gorgeous blokes were coming to the dinner. A new doctor, Lydgate, and someone who's a Sir James someone. She was dead excited. Reckoned she and Thea could have one each. But Thea took a shine to this Cass. A proper shine, all dreamy-eyed and smiling like an idiot. And then today she told me she was planning to move into Cassie's big cobwebby old house to be his assistant. Yeah, right. He's old enough to be her father, I thought. And that is probably what all this is about, really. Her having no dad of her own. I can't see it having a happy ending.
We have a new name for the coronavirus. The World Health Organization has officially called it COVID-19. Co for corona, vi for virus, d for disease, and 19 because it started last year. The name, though, of course, isn't the most pressing concern. On Monday in China, it suffered its highest number of deaths in one day.
Mm.
Hi, Celia. I hope you're doing okay. I am... Hi, Celia. It's Thea. No, you know that, because I'm sending it, so I don't need to... say that. Hello! I just wanted to send you a voice note and say hi, and I wanted to... what did I want to do? How do you explain to your sister why you left home to live with a stranger? And to let them know that it's important to do this, but that you do miss her. Is that a bit intense for a voice note? We've always got on, Celia and I. But we've always shrugged off the fact that there is this gulf between us. As if we actually acknowledged how different we were, we wouldn't be as close anymore. Because Celia just wants to get on with it all, you know, wants to be part of what's fashionable. And I'm not saying that, you know, I think I'm better than her. She's great, better than any of the boys she pines after. Like that James Chettam, for example. Well, she couldn't stop talking about him after Dunkel's dinner party. Oh, so I just want to say to her that it hurts me that we're not talking. My annoying little sister who I physically ache for. I need to explain to her how I got here. I started to feel like my life was trivial back in May. It was when I was about to take my A-levels, when I just placed my order for the School Leavers 2019 hoodie. Even though I got my uni offer and my predicted grades were good, everything started seeming pointless. Our uncle, Arthur, had always said to Celia and I that he could help us get anywhere we wanted. And I know that's a huge privilege to be supported in that way. But I felt guilty about it. I said that to my counsellor once. I'd been seeing her for anxiety, sort of heart palpitations about sort of the world. That there's fires in forests and seahorses dragging around cotton buds under the sea. I said, I feel guilty. And she said, well, what do you want to do about that? Celia and I would walked out of school for the climate strikes together. I'd made placards for both of us, but her arms ached, so she left hers on the pavement. I had the sense that she didn't really know why she was there, but everyone was going, so... I want to tell her that the reason I went to the climate strikes is because at that point I lay awake at night having intrusive thoughts about the planet being obliterated. I started listening to these guided meditations to soothe my mind, but the words would often change. Breathe in for four, hold for four, and think of all the turtles tangled in plastic packaging on the beach. I'd had a session with my school careers advisor. It says here you're going to study politics, is that right? Yes. But now I feel kind of weird spending 3 years advancing myself individually when the planet is speeding to destruction. He was silent for a moment. Well, that's very serious stuff. You obviously care a lot, Thea. Would you consider joining a charitable society at university? What I want to say to Celia is that it felt like no one was hearing me. And then I met Cass. He didn't roll his eyes when I spoke. I want to describe to Celia what I felt when I listened to him. That night at Uncle Arthur's, he was talking about this direct action he was helping to organise with an environmental group and this manifesto he was writing. A manifesto for non-violent action towards an environmental revolution. He was so eloquent and intelligent, and more than that, I just thought, how amazing. That night, I said that to Celia, amazing. And she said, what? The one who wouldn't shut up? I found his email online. He teaches at the local university. And I drafted this message, trying not to sound silly, asking to help him with the manifesto. And when he said yes, I felt calmer. I'd stopped going to school because it just didn't feel as important as dedicating myself to the manifesto. It was just a day here and there at first, then more and more. It was my counsellor who told my teachers who told my uncle. That night dinner was tense. Uncle Arthur was seething. What do you think you're playing at? Never mind how much money I've poured into your bloody school for you to come out with just a bunch of O-levels. I told him they're called GCSEs. And asked him what's the use of finishing A-levels anyway when I don't want to even go to university anymore. He rolled his eyes and I stormed off to my room. And that night is when I decided I was leaving. I was going to Lowick House and I was going to ask Cass if I could stay there. I knew he'd say yes. For the next few days, Celia kept messaging me. What the hell, Thea? That man's a sexist old weirdo. Come back. But he isn't a weirdo. He's a bit... I don't know. Outside of work, we don't have much to say to each other. But he has a nephew who comes often. Will Ladislaw. He's so nice and kind and, honestly, beautiful. He and I, we've started lending each other poetry and novels, and we've been writing these funny notes to each other. When he comes over, I get this anxious belly. Kaz saw me sweating once, heart beating out of control, and told me I looked terrible. He said maybe I should go to see that Dr. Lydgate, but I know this feeling isn't bad for me. This isn't like my usual anxiety. I look forward to seeing Will. Maybe I'll tell Celia. Maybe I'll message her and I'll say, hi, Celia, call me. I need help. I can't stop thinking about this boy.
I'm driving back from the surgery, in the dark, on the ring road, and I'm thinking about highways and systems and circuits in the human body. And those remarkable bi-directional conversations between brain and gut. I'm thinking how the microbiota teaches the immune system which cells to fight and which to leave alone. And I'm thinking how satisfying it is that today is a palindrome. 02-02-2020. Beautiful. And a woman. I'm thinking of Rosanna Vinci. Yeah. I'm very tired. Wall-to-wall patients all day and hours of paperwork, and suddenly I remember feeling a bump under the wheel. What if I've just hit something and driven on? What if I've maimed someone's dog, or worse, a person? I get off the ring road, I drive back, loop around, switch on the main beam to scan the tarmac. Nothing. I keep driving, and then I think, what if they staggered into the trees, collapsed behind a wall? So I turn back again, and there's an ambulance ahead of me. Sharp blue lights, and my mouth's dry, and I'm swallowing hard, but the ambulance takes a left, off the ring road, down a street where I've never been. Still, I follow it for a while, in case. And then I pull over, get out of the car, smoke a cigarette. I met her at her family home. It was her sister's birthday. I don't really do parties, but I've only been here 6 weeks, and my new friend Charlie Fairbrother, he kept hassling me to go with him to meet people, so I went. I'd never been to an Asian family party before. It was amazing. She opened the door when we arrived and...
Hi.
Wow. Stunning. Raven-haired, perfect smile. Wearing this incredible orange sort of sari thing, and her eyes.
I'm Rosie.
I know I shouldn't smoke, but it calms me. Why can't people see? We are the world, all connected, all one thing. We have to be a community. A body and a brain and a mind. We're a web. And despite years of research and, yes, okay, progress, there's still so much work to be done to understand the connections inside us. The workings of those invisible thoroughfares which are the first lurking places of anguish, love, mania, crime. My hospital will truly bring together the physical, the psychological, the workings of the brain, the immune system, human emotion. Of course there's no roadkill. No body.
Get a grip, Lydgate.
She found me in a corner talking to Charlie.
Okay.
He slid away when she came, winked at me behind her back. She said,
"Good, I found you."
And I felt a bit dizzy, energised, my palms sweaty. Hypothalamus working overtime, surging dopamine, cortisol, the lot. Ridiculous. She told me she's a...
social media influencer?
Whatever that is. She asked a lot of questions. I told her I was only in general practice temporarily, part-time, alongside the research and a pile of work to get the new hospital on its feet.
Wow.
I told her Nick Bulstrode's backing it. Asked if she knew him. And it turns out...
yeah, he's my uncle.
I hope I wasn't racist, but I think I looked surprised because, well, because he's white. I think I was stuttering. I mean, she kind of bailed me out. Asked if she should be scared of this coronavirus that seems to be on its way, and I said, yes, we all should be. She asked my name, and I said it was Lydgate. She laughed, asked my first name, and I said, everyone calls me Lydgate. And she says,
I'm not everyone.
She touched my arm. Talked about bodies and brains, about what happens when we're aroused. She thought I was flirting when I said that. And maybe I was. I was drowning in her eyes. I was wittering. Went on about bacteria in the gut.
Okay.
She said,
stop talking.
And she kissed me. On the mouth. Not tongues, but, you know, just kiss me. She laughed.
I wanted to do that. I hope you don't mind. So, yeah.
And then she just carried on, as if nothing had happened.
How's your family?
Asked about my family. So I told her. She liked my privilege. Private education. Was I trying to impress her?
Where did you study?
London, Edinburgh, Paris.
Wow.
Said she wants to get out of this place.
Oh, so dumb.
It's dull. Far too provincial. I should have told her it's perfect for me. That I'm committed to this town and its people. That I'm not wealthy, despite my background, and that I'm almost a socialist. I don't like social media. But I was dazzled by her. The prefrontal cortex of my brain was closing down. When I saw Charlie come back into the room, I said, excuse me.
Oh.
And I walked away from her.
Okay.
Why? Charlie's a vicar. I knew we'd be friends when I said that the Holy Trinity is actually the brain, the gut, and the immune system, and he properly laughed. And he's a gambler. With bitcoins. Some kind of online poker. He said I was crazy to walk away from Rosie, but I'm not bragging when I say I know women find me attractive. They always have. But I don't want a relationship. Not for at least 2 years. I have a 5-year plan. I'm not answering that. Don't recognise the number. The leafy south of the town. Nick Bulstrode lives just there. It's a mansion set back in the trees. He used to be a foreign exchange trader, never the money man. Now he says he's a property developer and a philanthropist. Can you be both? He's shifty, but I want his money. He has a terribly sensitive digestive system. Upset all the time. Interesting. Hey, doctor. Got any hangover meds? Ah. Heart emoji, sick head emoji, exploding brain. I didn't give her my number. Charlie must have. Thing is, I've been in love. I was living in Paris when I met her. Angelique. She was married. Completely gorgeous. One night, her husband fell downstairs. Fractured his skull. ruptured middle meningeal artery. He died. She was home, but she said she hadn't seen it happen. It was terrible. She was arrested. There was a court case all over the papers. She swore her innocence, and of course I believed her. Thank God when they reached a verdict of accidental death. I was obsessed with her. Asked her to marry me. She didn't say yes or no. She said, I'm guilty. I pushed him. I meant him to die. I left her that night. Came back to England soon after. I knew I must devote myself to science, not love. Shit. Something on the verge ahead. Huddled, something like a limb at an angle or...
That's a fucking burst bin liner.
You need to sleep, Tertius Lydgate. Get home. Have a drink. Maybe I'll message her.
To give the NHS that extra time, we will hold off step four openings until July the 29th, except for weddings that can still go ahead.
But for those still waiting for their small, big day, it just got even smaller.
Six people to your wedding. How are you going to make this work? Family or friends?
We just have to accept that we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Of going to the gym if it doesn't even help me carry basic camera equipment. I knew I should have brought Tershi along. I'm sure he would be more than willing to support his fiancée. Yes, I call him Tershi. I don't want people knowing that his actual name is Tertius. It makes him sound like a fool straight out of a Shakespeare play. I swear to God, if I've just broken this... Thank God, and thank you, Countryside, for your luscious grass. All I need is a nice backdrop. That's a pretty bench, very rustic looking. Shame about the metal fence behind it. I guess a prison-like background adds something a little interesting to a video about love and marriage. I'll have to scrap having my wedding in the countryside because the backdrop would be marred by more ugly fences. But it would be so beautiful if it worked out. Take away all this metal and replace it with an outdoor mocktail bar to greet guests. Kiwari chairs with blush pink velvet cushions. Fresh David Austin's lining the walkway, and at the end, an archway covered with more flowers and foliage. Oh, I'm getting goosebumps just imagining it all coming together. Standing under that archway, in his tux, will be Tershi, my love, waiting for me. He will be swooning as I walk down in my Sabyasachi gown. One of the most sought-after Indian designers. There will be violinists serenading our guests as I make my entrance. Call me crazy, but I would love to play the piano at our reception. It would just make it so special to add a little piece of me. Everyone knows what Tershi is all about, but I want them to know that these dainty little fingers aren't just pretty to look at. They can actually create some magic. I know I could have become a pianist if I stuck to it. Mum always told me that I could have been playing at the Royal Albert Hall, but I let my so-called friends at school make me believe that I was wasting my time. I practiced every day through lockdown. It took me back to when I was a little girl. No one cared about how I looked. They cared about what I was creating. Damn it, the wedding planner again. I feel like she only ever calls to tell me what I can't have at my wedding. What can she possibly cancel now? Hello? Oh, hi, darling. Sorry I haven't returned your calls. I've got so much going on right now. Lockdown is the perfect opportunity for me to grow my online audience. I'm currently filming a video on love and marriage because it's such a sensitive topic, especially now. Just trying to take advantage of a bad situation, you know. Oh, I didn't mean to be insensitive. I know how much the wedding industry is suffering right now. Don't worry. Tershi is ready to meet all my needs once this wedding is allowed to happen. We'll be your most lucrative clients. No, I didn't watch the news conference, but I saw the restrictions are slowly being lifted, so that's good news for us, right? Small. Maybe around 100 people. Oh, please don't say that. You've been planning for so long now, but I feel like the wedding of my dreams will never happen. I don't think it's something I can discuss with my fiancé right now. He has a lot on his plate. Sure, we can talk it through later. I'm sick of hearing about COVID. Yes, I understand that millions of people have lost their lives, but it doesn't mean that I should stop living. My wedding planner thinks we'll still only be allowed 5 people. I don't know how anyone can call that a wedding. Tershi keeps banging on about how important it is to follow guidelines and keep everyone safe, as if I don't care about the health of our guests. Of course I care. But I also care about having the perfect wedding, and I refuse to allow a virus to stop that from happening. This is the wedding of Rosanna Vinci and Dr. Tertius Lydgate. No one will want to miss out. More bad news. Hello? Speaking. No, I'm afraid we haven't finalised the ring yet. My fiancé is a very busy man. He's a doctor, and I'm sure you're aware of the current situation. We'll get back to you as soon as possible. Oh, what wonderful news! We should get ourselves booked in if you'll be opening in June. It would be great to actually sit down in person and design the ring rather than relying on Zoom. You can't really see the sparkle through a screen. Of course, I will discuss a date and time with my fiancé and get back to you ASAP. There's nothing wrong with planning a wedding before he's given me a ring, right? I mean, we are engaged. He is officially my fiancé and everyone in town knows about it, so no one is confused about that fact. It's just that he's a little busy with work at the moment and an engagement ring is not something that can be achieved overnight. Everyone always wants to know how we met. I think it's amazing when two worlds collide because you can create such magic. We met at my sister Frida's birthday party a few months ago. We got talking and I wanted to make sure he noticed me. I mean, really noticed me. He was incredibly charming. The way he talked about medicine was so endearing. But then he went into detail about guts and bacteria and I felt like I was going to throw up. I had to distract him before I actually did, so I told him to stop talking and then I realised it was a bit rude and tried to make up for it. Well, I only wanted to give him a peck on the cheek, but he moved his head as I went in and it ended up being on his lips. I'd never told him that it was an accident, though. It would break his little heart, bless him. It's not very difficult for a man to become entranced by me. A little banter, dressing well, and knowing when to hold his gaze a little longer always works a treat. But Tershi was different. When he told me he was a doctor, my mind started racing. The idea of being the wife of a doctor, just saying it sends shivers down my spine. I'm not naive to think that a marriage doesn't have its challenges. We haven't known each other for very long, but you never really know anyone until you live with them anyway. We'll have to make time for each other. My nanny always goes on about compromise. She says, marriage isn't easy, better. It's all about giving and taking. She must be right, since my nanny and nana have been married for over 60 years. She always talks about how important families are in the relationship too. To make a marriage work, we must give time and effort to each other's families. She always says, "Kandan pehle aate hai." Family comes first. I wonder what my nanny would make of Tershi's family home. He finally took me there last week, and it was more beautiful than I could ever have imagined. It was absolutely stunning. They definitely put their money where their mouth is. I can see myself living a luxe life like that. We could enjoy it together. At the end of a long work day at the hospital, he will come home to me and want to be with me alone. I've told him that once you walk through the doors, it's all about us. I don't want to hear about holistic medicine. To be honest, I don't know why all our conversations start off with him talking about work. I understand he's passionate about his research into the new micro... whatever. And it was endearing at first, but it's getting a little boring now. I want to talk about us when we're together, not work. Eventually, I hope he will feel comfortable enough to make an appearance on my YouTube channel. My viewers will adore him. He could join me on one of my current affairs episodes. A lot of people think that I prefer to avoid discussing weighty matters, but that's not true at all. I make sure I keep myself informed. I know women are bored of constantly being shown content about making themselves look pretty, looking at distorted bodies and unrealistic ideas of a beautiful woman. We want to watch real women with real fears and insecurities talking about real life. Next week, I'll be filming a video on the increase in reports of domestic violence during lockdown. A video like that would also show Tershi that my channel is for intelligent women who care about the world we live in. We're not just pretty faces. Maybe I should get Frieda involved too. Help her find some purpose in life, because at the moment, I don't think she knows whether she's coming or going. She never stops talking about going to visit our Uncle Featherstone, but she only goes there to make sure he doesn't forget about her when it comes to writing his will. And what about me? I don't imagine he's thinking of leaving me a penny. Frieda's always been his favourite niece. Well, good luck to her. He's hideous. I know she has a thing for Mary Garth. In my opinion, she needs to aim a little higher. Has Frieda even told Mary that she wants to fund their lives together with Featherstone's money? Maybe that's why Mary's taking such care of him at Stone Court, to butter him up a little. It's all starting to make a little more sense. Oh, look! Will Ladislaw's back from London. He's my favourite Polish-Jamaican poet. Well, not that there are many of them, of course. He's lost his shop job and is looking for a new one. I don't think posting about it on Instagram will help him. It would be so much fun if we filmed a video together. He would be so popular with my viewers. We could do a musical challenge. Will loves music. I'm sure Tershi won't mind, because it's not really something he's into.
Today has been called Freedom Day in England, as most legal restrictions on social contact have been lifted. There are now no limits on how
So this morning we see a major easing of lockdown across England. How has Warwickshire been affected? Have you missed your bingo sessions? Or are you anxious about being back in public? We want to hear from you.
I shouldn't really be here. I've lost so much work with lockdown, and I'm trying to save for my lad Azabiki's music lessons. But I'm celebrating. Cheers. It's the 6th of July, 2020. 2 days since the pubs were allowed to reopen. I've got a job cleaning for Dr. Lydgate and his wife Rosie. They didn't waste much time tying the knot. I'm starting next week. As long as I wear a mask and I don't clean his study. Oh, papers everywhere. Plans for a new special hospital, apparently. mind and body, he said. Treating the whole person. Oh, I didn't understand half of what he was telling me, but he made me feel interesting. Oh, he's a listener, and he has the darkest, deepest eyes. As I was arriving at the house, that revolting Nick Bulstrode was leaving. He's Rosie Lydgate's uncle, but I doubt he's in their bubble. Gets everywhere, though. And she surprised me. She's got a grand piano, and it's not just for show. She played it for me really well. I told her, my Azabiki's a gifted pianist. And she said he could come and have a go on her piano. Oh, you can't know in advance, can you? I will all join up, and it's mostly through my cleaning. I always say you mustn't be ashamed of your work, whatever it is, and not be always looking over your shoulder for something better. I love my job, and I love who I meet through it. I'd have never known Thea and Celia if I hadn't to clean for their uncle, and I'd have never met the Lydgates if it wasn't for Thea putting them my way, and on it goes. Oh, I saw Thea today, and I was trying to persuade her to hire me. That Cass and her, they are loaded, but she seems to spend all her time looking after the house. She's as miserable as hell. I could have predicted it. And she looks awful, poor kid. And Celia's getting married to that posh Sir James bloke. Some wealthy Indian woman, Mrs. Cadwallader, or well, Mrs. C, they call her, friend of the family, she set them up. And now she's planning on doing them a banquet because they're not allowed a proper reception. Thea said she doesn't know if she's going because of COVID rules, but I suspect it's that bloody Cass saying no. It's awful to see her so down. So I changed the subject. That young arty guy, Will, Cassie's cousin or something, I met him last week. He turned up at Mr. Brooks and he was there all day helping him with his campaign. When I saw Thea, I said, he's a nice young man, isn't he? And she blushed. And then she said, Cass doesn't like him coming round anymore. I'll read into that what I like.
Tell me. At last chat, more work. They'll all be here in 2 hours and you haven't even fried the pakora yet. Moving at glacial speed. Hey, Pragna. Yeah, keep your mask on in the kitchen. I don't care if it's hot. COVID rules, remember.
Okay.
Oh, and go easy on the chili powder. English guests won't be able to cope with fiery tongues and runny bottoms.
Right, got you.
Oh, it's exhausting. Volunteers from the Sri Krishna temple have come to help with the cooking. Absolute bunch of idiots. Would have been better if I'd gone to the local KFC, got 50 buckets of their wicked variety chicken. I guess would probably have lapped it all up. The English palate isn't very discerning. They're happy with anything, though they do bleat on about how much they like their curry, especially that odious Mr. Bulstrode, who claims that curry is an English colonial invention. Can you believe that? What does he think us Indians were eating before the Brits came to town? Fish and chips? Curry. Oh, I hate that word. It's a colonial idiom. Comes from the Tamil word curry, which means sauce, because the English couldn't be bothered to learn the actual names of our Indian dishes. Mr. Seed, he read somewhere that the word curry was first seen in England as early as 1747 in a cookbook, featuring 3 recipes of Indian pilau, rabbit curry and Indian pickle. Bunny curry.
Bunny curry.
Actually, Mary Jan, Mr. C, got hold of the recipe for me and I tried it out. It wasn't bad. I mustn't let Bulstrode get to me. After all these years in Blighty, I've come to realise that the English always colonise everything. Either anglicise our names or pretend that they've reinvented the wheel. Anyway, I digress. I wanted to tell you about my great news. Careful! Don't just stand there staring. Pick it up, sorry. And keep that mask on.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, nerves are raw. It's like Dante's Inferno in there. Mary Jan told me to step out for a bit. He always looks out for me. We're eating out here in the garden today. Don't have to worry about spreading the virus when we're outdoors. I have the touch when it comes to parties. Everyone I invite turns up, so I have to keep an eye on numbers. Oh, I was going to tell you my news. But first off, I managed to make a great match. And today we are celebrating by inviting the newlyweds and family friends for dinner. Hence the big meal. Oh, I know what you're thinking. I'm an interfering busybody. That's what Mary Jan tells me. That I should leave the youngsters to get on with their own lives and stop matchmaking. Well, let's get one thing straight. I don't believe in arranged marriages. I didn't have an arranged marriage myself. Actually, it's the wrong terminology. Because all marriages are arranged. By whom is the only question. Whether parents or friends arrange it, or a commercial website or dating app arrange it, or you arrange it. It is an arrangement. And sometimes one needs that help to edge one towards the right person. Because so many love marriages have ended in disaster. Well, look at that dear. She moved in with the most unsavoury, unsuitable man, Kaz. What on earth she saw in him is quite beyond me. According to her, they're not romantically involved, but she still moved into his place, acting like a doe-eyed disciple, wasting her youth on him, thinking he had a brilliant mind. She's a pretty young thing, and he's a miserable old goat. Mind you, I knew there was a great deal of nonsense in Thea. A flighty sort of holier-than-thou stuff. Changed her name from Dorothea, which rather reveals someone who is not comfortable in their own skin, don't you think? Spending all her time recycling quotes by that Greta girl and doing all that fundraising for the Bangladeshi Community Centre at Bird Grove. As for Kaz, writing his dull papers on climate change that no one ever reads. No, don't get me wrong. I'm all for taking up the cause for the climate. I have my children, Maya and Minnie, and they will have children, and I want them to live on an earth which can sustain them. But Kaz, he's enough to bore humanity into extinction. He has no good red blood cells in his body. Apparently somebody put a drop under a magnifying glass and it was all semicolons and parentheses. Oh, and now Thea's making eyes at that young sprig, Will Goldslaw, or whatever he's called. A sort of Byronic hero and an amorous conspirator with his ready tongue. He could give Shah Rukh Khan a run for his money. And I say, never trust a man with bedroom eyes, Dorothea. If only she'd gone for the man who I kept pushing away, she would have become a sane, sensible woman. Now her sister, Celia, has got Sir James. Yeah, a fine match. Good for her. Good for me. Well, tonight we celebrate Celia and Sir James' marriage, and I was the one who put the idea into Sir James's head. Tonight, I will reveal my plans. Oh, I do feel sorry for Thea. Both her and Celia were orphans. They have an uncle, Mr. Brooke, but he doesn't seem to have a firm opinion on anything. He's a fence-sitter. Though he goes on about caring for truth, whatever that is. Of course, he voted to remain, though I am sensitive to the fact that Mr. C voted that way too. I tried to persuade him otherwise, but would he listen? I kept telling him, it's time to take back control of our own country. And he kept saying, Bina, the EU was created to ensure peace in a continent torn by centuries of conflict that culminated in World War II. Within the European Economic Area, there has been no war since 1945. It's about interconnection, not isolation. Honestly, he talks such claptrap. We didn't speak for weeks. And after the glorious day when we won the vote, he said I was walking around looking smug. And couldn't bear to look at me. Oh, I had to make amends then. I cooked him his favourite chili paneer and vegetable biryani that night. Just because my husband has different political opinions to me and is far too liberal for my liking, I don't want this to be a cause for a marriage breakup. Sunita Desai and her husband actually divorced over the whole thing. Yeah, he voted to leave and she to remain. Imagine, 20 years of marriage destroyed by a difference of politics. Oh, mind you, you should see her now, wandering around wearing strange multicoloured skirts, swathed in clashing coloured scarves, hanging round with activists. If there's a demonstration, I can guarantee that Sunita will be there screaming like a banshee. She says she has abandoned her old life for a new life of activism. She's 63 now. And she's let her hair go grey. Mind you, I must admit, there is something about Sunita. I can't help but admire her. I might try and arrange a meeting for her with someone. A late-life second marriage, perhaps. I did set my sights initially on Mr. Brooke for Sunita, but when I told Mary John, he laughed uproariously at me. Claims he has perfect gaydar and that said Brooke is clearly gay. Well, really. I invited her tonight to prove him wrong, but Sunita declined. Another demonstration in a field somewhere. Oh, they're laying the table. Better go and check on it. Ah, my table is looking perfect. Fit for a banquet. Maya has even printed out a beautiful menu. How thoughtful. She's very gifted in the arts. I had hoped that one of my children might be a doctor, but it doesn't look very promising. Minnie wants to be an actor. Mary John tells me in no uncertain terms that I must not interfere with the children's career aspirations. His heart is in the right place, of course, but I do worry. How is an artist and an actor going to survive financially in this cutthroat world? How will they attract a good partner? Perhaps Minnie will marry a doctor. Yeah, that would be a good result. I set a bad example. Married a poor Hindu theologian and made myself a pitiable object among my family. I come from immeasurable high birth, good lineage. But I fell in love and arranged the marriage myself. On the whole, it's been a good marriage. He's well respected in our community, always there at every birth, wedding and funeral. And though we have our great differences, we rub along together fine. Actually, it's more than fine. We seem to be as in love with each other as we were on the first day our eyes locked in mutual longing. He's still a fine figure of a man, a little thin on top, but kind eyes and a warm heart. So, of the guests that are coming today, apart from the bride and groom, of course, I have invited the young precocious Dr. Lydgate, who is terribly snooty. But he's very well connected, so we must keep in with him. Mr. Brooke, Mary and Old Bedroom Eyes Will are all coming too, and Mr. C's great Christian friend, Fairbrother. He's a nice man, Fairbrother. Dutifully looks after his mother and lives frugally. He's lonely. I need to find him a partner. He has his eyes set on Mary, a puppy dog whenever he sees her, but I don't think she's the one for him. I don't know why, but I sense that Mary has lit a candle for someone else. I haven't pinned down who it is yet. I didn't invite Bulstrode. Last time I cooked for him, he joked that my curry was too hot and gave him diarrhea for 3 days. Dreadful man. Tonight, after dinner, I will tell everyone my great news. Mr. C is very doubtful, but also not unsupportive of my new venture. But there are too many lonely hearts. too many people lost in the modern world without a life partner. Someone to hold their hand and go through life together. Love, companionship and laughter are important. Sex is important. I've set everything up. Bank account, business license, an admin assistant, my freshly printed leaflets for my new business venture. Bina's Bridal Boutique. Guaranteed marriage introductions from Bina Cadwallader. We can arrange introduction meetings or send details directly. We cater for all ages, early 20s to 70s, and backgrounds, single, divorced, widowed, with or without children. We are not an online window shopping service. We only have genuine clients serious about settling down. Please feel free to call us without obligation.
Hello.
The guests are arriving. I can't wait to see their faces when I tell them the news.
Oh no, missed it. When's the next one? This is what you get for snoozing the alarm. This is why I hate early shifts. I wonder what Frieda's doing. Probably not even awake yet. I'm so unfit. This is ridiculous. Well, now I just have to sit and freeze for 20 minutes. You always know cold has reached a new level when you can see your own breath. Ah, I do love this time of year. Mornings are all crisp and cold and you have a legitimate reason to wrap up in big chunky jumpers and order far too many pumpkin spice lattes. I really wanted to be on time today, of all days. I'm clearing out Mr. Featherstone's room this morning. Losing him wasn't a shock. He'd been ill for a really long time. It was all the other stuff. He wasn't the sort of man you got close to. Frieda tried, but he'd never been a very kind uncle. But that's not what's getting to me the most. He asked me to destroy his will. And not just that one will that most people have, no. He asked me to get rid of his second will, the one that left all his money to his long-lost son that no one's ever heard of. How could he ask me that? I mean, who am I to get involved in all of that? I just stood there, staring at him, wondering if it was some weird joke. It wasn't. It wasn't a joke. He was serious. I told him that I couldn't do it. Of course I couldn't. Stupid thing is, all I can do now is wish that I had. And not for me, but for Frieda. Because his first will left everything to her, his favourite niece. So if I'd have done what he asked, she'd be rich now. I can't believe he asked me. The thought of dying, knowing that you're going, it must do mad things to your mind, mustn't it? I've woken up with a knot in my stomach every day since. I don't want to think about it, but I can't stop thinking about it. And I can't stop thinking about Frieda. I could have completely changed her life. And I didn't. I would ask her sister Rosie for advice, but I'm not sure she can keep a secret. the Rosie Vincy. Over 1 million followers or something now on Instagram and Twitter. That's mad, isn't it? She's really, really talented musically, and she's really kind. But you'd never know it. I couldn't do what she does and splash my whole life across social media. You're either a social media person or you're not. And I'm definitely not. Being sort of invisible has always been a bit of a superpower, really. No, Rosie's great. That girl was born to be an influencer. She is really, really beautiful. Frieda, though, now she really is great. She's sort of brilliant, really. I'm definitely in love with her. What are the chances in this day and age of loving someone who actually loves you back? She knows me better than anyone. I've always assumed that we'll end up together. No big clap of thunder or a flash of lightning. No defining moment. No big declarations. No, it's more gorgeous than that. It's more whole because I've always known. Wonder what she's doing now. She'll be up now, surely. Oh, it's all a bit messy. She's a bit messy, and I really can't get involved in anything messy, even if she is completely brilliant. She doesn't have a job, for one. She's between jobs. She can't settle to anything, and my carer's wage isn't enough for us both to live on. Mr. Featherstone's money, it could have fixed that. Or at least some of it. How is he still so infuriating, even though he's not here anymore? The bus. I'll have to forget about that latte. But if I run, well, let's not get overexcited. Fast walk. I shouldn't be too late. See someone day in, day out, of course they'll have an impact on you. I wouldn't have ever wanted to get stuck next to Featherstone in the pub. He'd sit and complain about everything all night. Annoying. I can't imagine Stone Court without him. I'm sure he'd find it greatly amusing that I'm on my hands and knees foraging behind his bed for his reading glasses. He'll be in the last place I look. That's such a stupid expression. Of course it's the last place you look, because once you found the thing, you stop looking for it. Oh, hang on. What's that down the side of the mattress? Ooh. Stale sweets. These must have been from last Halloween. The only time that we ever have any rainbow drops around here. I don't want to look at another rainbow ever again. I used to love them. I used to love being clapped for too. Nah, still gonna love that, I'm sure. I need to take his wheelchair back. No more Wednesday walks with Featherstone. He always moaned that I pushed him over too many bumps in the pavement. I couldn't possibly have been any more gentle. All his stories. The last trip we had, he told me about when a whole heap of apples fell from the sky in Tile Hill. I can't believe that was true. Apples don't fall from the sky. Given the year we've had, I actually wouldn't be surprised if that's the next thing to hit the news. Falling sky apples. Oh, shut up, Mary. I'm so tired. This continual lack of sleep, it can't be good for a person. If I'm going to have a complete burnout at some point, I hope it leaves me with something more interesting than gibberish about falling sky apples. I'll be as bad as Featherstone. Shame we didn't have anyone else to bore with these stories. Of course, every man and his dog showed their face once it was time to hear if he'd left them anything in his will. Didn't give a toss about him when he was alive. Except for Frieda. She visited all the time, even though he was such hard work. She's so lovely. The minute that there was a chance that they could possibly get their hands on his money, they couldn't turn up quick enough. All jogging for the bus that day, I bet. Imagine if I had burnt the second will and it had got out. I don't think there's physically any more room in this place for more gossip. I'd have to kiss goodbye to my reputation. No more ticks in the brilliant worker column in my appraisals. I don't think excellent workers burn wills. Excellent workers get on their hands and knees and clear out dusty cupboards. That's what they do. Oh, I hope someone's going to come and carry all these boxes. Would be just my luck to have avoided getting ill for so long and then to put my back out. So many people off at the moment. I cannot afford to herniate a disc. Lift from the knees, Mary. Straight back. Oh, no, well, that's not going to happen, is it? I probably should sign up for the gym. I should definitely sign up for the gym. CrossFit will solve that, I'm sure. Saved by the bell. Charlie Fairbrother. Invite to a Thanksgiving service and harvest supper at the church. Aw. He's such a sweet guy, and in a way, it would be far easier if I loved him. He does really like me. Hasn't got a bad bone in his body, and I don't want to hurt him. It would be like kicking a Labrador or something, and I don't want to do that. Poor Charlie. Poor, lovely, simple, uncomplicated Charlie. I can't go to the church on Saturday anyway, because I said I'd go with Dad to the anti-HS2 demonstration in Kenilworth. Dad's been to all the demonstrations, and I've not been able to make them. Saturday is important. HS2 will run right through Freshett Farm. They'll close and bang goes Dad's job. It's his life. He'd lose everything. He struggles to make ends meet as it is. He's too generous. He gives his time for free far too often. He puts everyone else first, even if it leaves him short. Thought that he will lose the farm? He doesn't deserve that. Nobody on that farm deserves to be ploughed over, no matter how good the train links are. I've got to make those banners and placards for the demonstration. Seemed like the right thing to offer at the time. Really wish I thought it through a bit more before the words came out of my mouth. So far, all I have is a badly drawn squirrel on a slightly torn piece of A4 paper, and truthfully, I'm not sure that will quite get the message across with enough power. Not least because the squirrel looks like a bear. I wonder if Frieda will be there. I don't want her to see the bear. I mean, the squirrel. It might end up on Rosie's Insta and then go viral. Maybe that's not such an awful idea. Well, no, it is awful because the squirrel looks like a bear. Neither of which have anything to do with the farm. Art was never my strong point. I can just picture Frieda's face when she sees it. Oh, actually, I really hope she is there. It's not how I'd necessarily choose to spend a Saturday night with her. But if I have to see her face whilst it's obscured by bear-shaped placards, then I'll take it. I'll give the artwork another bash tonight. If I survive today's shift without getting involved in any more drama. I wonder who will be in Featherstone's room. I think it might always be his room.
This is the first day of a new month. It is the start of a new era, though, in terms of Britain's relations with the European Union.
The Union flag was removed without ceremony in Brussels today. History made, but the real change on
hold. Yesterday, January the 20th, 2021, saw the highest death toll since the start of the pandemic. And also the Met Office have issued...
Sign here, please.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a lovely day. I never grow tired of seeing people's faces when the post arrives. Apart from that initial glare I get in some parts, the furrowed brow that asks, who's that black fella walking up my drive? Parcels usually get the best response, ranging from the quizzical, what did I order again? To that look of materialistic satisfaction as they welcome yet another piece of bubble wrap rubbish to their hoard. People love their packages. Thea hates me being a postie. Got a real bee in a bonnet about online shopping. Will, she says, can't you see how it all intersects? The increase of our carbon footprint, the death of the high street, fueling poverty wages abroad. Of course, I agree, but people still need their mail. Needs must. You've got to earn a living. Letters are a bit different. Letters can make or break someone's day. Something Thea and I have often chatted about. We started writing to each other shortly after we met. Bit of a laugh at first, but also as a kind of a nod to a past that seemed to be smoother, less complicated, more direct. I'd write, Dearest Thea, it's Will Ladislaw here, pretending to be formal and distant when it was obviously the opposite, and it became our thing, pontificating on the state of society in highbrow lingo like 19th century acquaintances. So when I got one from her this morning, it got my attention. Not that I've opened it yet. We haven't spoken for a few weeks and I've been bracing myself for what might come next. I used to love receiving one of her handmade cards. A couple of lines that were always a welcome interruption to my day. And I'd answer back promptly with what I thought was a witty take on the news of the day. Or sometimes with a poem. Being a postie. This came during COVID after losing my job at a certain European furniture shop that shall remain nameless. Sent us all a letter. 4 weeks' notice. I ripped it up, took a deep breath and moved from being surplus to local requirements to an essential worker. I was, until a couple years back, a journalist chained to a desk and computer. Called myself a writer, actually. To bring together the stuff I did at work with the other bits I did, sometimes in private and occasionally on stage. Poems, spoken words, that kind of thing. I used to learn. Hits its mark, my art course, and my poetry. I had an audience who, like me, were concerned about this place being taken over by a tribal mindset. Everyone running to their own camps, fighting for their own kind, trampling down on everyone else. It's had me worried. I mean, this city had a proud tradition of fighting for the working class, for trying to lift people up, for pushing through adversity together.
Nima Vodnoshji Bur Sordinoshji, as my mother would have shouted. That famous Polish cry for unity.
But then we vote, and people decide that working together is somehow done with. Time for me, myself and I. My spoken word became spiteful. People said they wanted the truth, but in truth, they wanted to be entertained. I got booed.
Apparently I've changed, Thea tells me. And this new me is bordering on becoming toxic. What does that even mean? And in any case, she's changed too. When I met Thea, it was love at first sight.
seriously. She was leaving Lorick House as I was arriving. I needed to see my cousin, Casaubon, or Cass, as the students called him. I had cash flow issues and was pretty desperate. Normally, I wouldn't have put myself through the torture of asking him for help. I know you shouldn't speak ill of the dead, but that man could be a real prick. Always ranting, always right. For all his green credentials and ramblings about equality and collaboration, he relished his spot as a chief intellectual, loved the easy comfort that came from having a respectable job at a respectable university, a healthy guaranteed income and a mortgage-free home. Didn't make for the warmest of relationships, but I'll give him his due. He looked out for me when no one else did.
Can you leave it in the box, please, because we're isolated?
No problem at all. Cheers. So, here I was, slowly walking through his gate, when Thea appears. She had this mound of books and papers, and she walked straight into me. Stuff went flying, and she was like, "Oh, sorry, I was miles away." And I was like, "No worries, my fault." We ran around trying to grasp the notes that were now floating away around Cass's tip of a garden, an impossible task. But it was fun to try, and we ended up laughing hysterically. Ice and tension completely broken. We got our breath back. Slowly, our eyes met. And there it was. A yearning. A finding. Our gate moment, we called it. I'd been dying for a want of a spark. And here it was. Right there in the garden. I was brought to life. As for Thea and Cass, things were complicated. I mean, were they lovers? Was she his employee? His workhorse? His adoring fan? I mean, as much as I despised him, as much as I dreamed of Thea and me doing a thing, I could see she was devoted to him, and I didn't want to get in the middle of something I didn't understand. I was never going to be that guy. Despite our recent friction, we've been the closest of friends, allies in the truest sense. Thea is so intense, so moral, always talking about justice, the climate, what we need to do to make the world a place we can all enjoy. Universal basic income, votes for school children, reparations for African countries, banning cars. She makes me smile because it isn't even a performance. She means every word of it, and it's irresistible. It's impossible not to love her. But from the beginning, I vowed to do things clean and clear. I busied myself, buoyed by her enthusiasm, with a variety of campaigns. Mental health was my thing, given my own episodes of despair over the years. So many that they kind of blurred into one big mountain of grief. The death of my mum when I was young. Too young to even remember her face. I missed her. The longing I felt and still feel has led me to some dark places. Then my dad, no doubt alive in some far off place, but dead to me in any meaningful way. He'd been a student and activist who'd overstayed his visa. I've got no way of knowing if he ever set eyes on me before he was deported back to Jamaica, but I've been told again and again by Cass that I'm like him. Never meant as a compliment, and usually included words like lazy and bastard, so there's your clue to his views on my heritage. Apparently, my dad made no effort to fight the deportation, despite my mum's desperation. When she passed away, I was moved around various relatives, eventually being placed into foster care. But you can't live in the past, right? Got to move on. Look forward. Thea told me early on that she thought I had abandonment issues, or is it attachment? Whichever, I struggle with connecting, committing. Rubbish, I said. Then 2 months ago, Cass died. Some may say that it opened the door for us, but Thea was right. I was too scared to walk through. To be honest, this past couple of years has been weird for me. Unprecedented is the word of the age, so I know I'm not actually alone in feeling this. A global nightmare, a plague of sorts, has sucked the life out of our day-to-day interactions. I know it's been happening for centuries. The stories of killing of black men and women, both here and abroad, that are visiting us with alarming frequency seem to be hitting harder than ever before. Police using tasers and guns with impunity, neighbourhood watches hunting down black teenagers, black mothers killed while watching TV in their living rooms, men held down by police officers until they can't breathe. So people march under banners of Black Lives Matter, and counter demonstrations of patriots just turn out to protect statues of slave owners, and my head is so full. Just no room for anything apart from hurt and confusion and sadness. And I try to tell Thea, I try and tell her that I don't know what to do. If I should stand and fight like the black man people see, or if I should claim my rights as a British citizen with stake in this nation's well-being and future, or if I should just try my luck in the land of my grandfather, Poland. Would I be welcome there? I asked her. Or should I search for my dad back in Jamaica, where my skin, hair and features are accepted and unremarkable at last? Last month, I was sorting my mail. Stood next to the same guy I'd worked with back at the furniture shop. 2 years I've known him, and he asks, "What are you, Will?" No hesitation, not a hint of embarrassment. Just looked at me like I was a lump of unformed clay that he could project his curiosity onto. And when I answered, "I'm a human being," he laughed and said, No, like, where'd you come from? You mixed or something? Got a bit of African in you." And I was speechless again. No words, right? How'd you answer that? Oh, shit! I used to write poems in response to crap like that. But instead, I open up to Thea to connect, right? She says something about going higher when they go low. She'd heard it on some trendy podcast. But when I asked her if she'd ever had to go higher, if she'd ever had to live through such indignities, she said no. And when I suggested that she think before letting such rubbish trip off of her tongue, she nodded and then said maybe this wasn't the best time to discuss a future away from here, you know. Somewhere I could feel safe and be treated with respect. Maybe she's right. Maybe I've got issues. Maybe I went too far, asked too much, or worse, asked something that was impossible to answer. Where is that place of safety, Thea? She didn't say anything. Neither did I. Ran out of words. But God, I love her. And today, she sends me this letter. Here goes. "Dearest Will, it's Thea Brooke here. Meet me at the gate. Come in, Thea. Hold on."
Residents and businesses close to a main road in South Warwickshire fear it might be partially closed for as long as a year.
We're going to be sandwiched between two railway lines. The access will be extremely difficult.
Work on HS2 is well underway, but it is causing disruption.
Stop! HS2!
£8.20 in change, 300 by backs, One cheque for 50 quid. That's not a bloody enough, Tracy. It's March 2021, end of the tax year, and I have earned not a bloody enough. Oh, he's good, isn't he? As a BK, my lad. I used to be in a band when I was his age. We weren't like the Spice Girls around. We were a kind of ska punk, and I played trumpet. We were called the Exceptional Lobsters, which came from the Specials, special, exceptional, and King Prawn, changed to Lobster. They were our two favourite bands. Oh, we were terrible. I loved it, though, the buzz, the music. My lad's got that passion and talent. Oh, I want him to do something with it. I was talking to my oldest friend yesterday, Susan Garth. She was in the band. Her girl Mary's a carer at Stone Court. Me and Sue's were at school together. Sue stayed on at school, but I left. Got a job at Asda. Met Azabiki's dad. They're out at Freshest Farm now. Her husband's the manager, and she is proper caught up with the anti-HS2 protests. I've never told anyone this, but 2 years ago, I borrowed money. A stupid loan. The interest on it is crazy. I'm due to have it paid off by the end of this month, but I am nowhere near. It was to buy a quality piano for Azabike and lessons for him with a good teacher. He asked me where I'd got the money. He knows we're skint. I lied. I told him some great auntie of mine had died and left me a bit, and she'd wanted it to go towards his music. I don't think he believed me, but he didn't say. Sometimes I lie awake all night worrying. I've used a food bank loads of times. I'm ashamed. And I don't want Azabiki to feel burdened. But his teacher says he really should be studying somewhere like London or Manchester. He's 16, he's old enough to make the journey, but I just don't know how I'd find the money. Chucks, that's my ex, Azabiki's dad, he always helps, and he'd pay if he could, but the nightclub where he works, they've hardly been open for a year, and they reckon they're going to close soon for good. I have to find more work.
April Fool's Day 2021? And who's the fool? Rosie's supposed to be resting, but no, she's in the lounge with Will Ladislaw playing loud, terrible music and singing along. Nice. I'm mostly grateful that the windows are closed, but they're not wearing masks. And I have work to do, urgently. How can I work? I'm trying to write a conference paper to be delivered on Saturday on the impact of stress on the brain, and the irony of this doesn't escape me. Rosie's supposed to be resting because she miscarried our child. I know she miscarried our child because she went horse riding. Yes, fucking horse riding, and she fell. Horse riding with my vapid, Tory, bully boy fop of a cousin who turned up because she wrote to him to ask if he could lend us money. Of course, I had no idea. I refused his patronage, obviously. I said to her, I sometimes think you wish I was more like my odious relatives, and she didn't deny it. She cried, asked me to fasten her hair, said, please don't be angry, Tershi, and of course I dissolve as soon as she touches me. Oh, Rosie. We've lost our baby. We can never recover from that. It might have brought us together, but it might tear us apart. That aside, though I know it can never be aside. She says I neglect her, that I'm a workaholic. And I say she's rarely taken any interest in my work, hardly supported me, despite the fact, get this, she's taken to using the trad wife label. Reckon she's part of a global subculture of intelligent women who value the old-fashioned female roles of staying at home under their husband's protection, which is all very well, except she wouldn't know the Hoover if she fell over it. She spends my earnings like water. Last night, for the first time in my life, I gambled with bitcoins, just like Charlie. I've always berated him for his gambling habit, but it seems I've learned from him. So now I'm a hypocrite as well as a debtor.
What are you doing?
I am £350,000 in debt, and that's not counting the mortgage. I've never said this out loud before.
After you.
We have to move to a much more modest house. We have to cut our cloth. I've told Tracy, regardless of COVID, she can't clean for us anymore. I've cancelled the wine order, Netflix, Prime, the landscaping we scheduled for May, the luxury spa break Rosie's booked. She doesn't seem able to understand. She only talks of us moving to London, a fresh start. I've suggested she starts giving piano lessons, but these last few months, she doesn't even play. She just spends. Every day, she comes home with more shopping bags. Yesterday, while she was having a bath, I took her phone and deleted her bank details. I found her cards and cut them up. I don't think she'll ever forgive me. And perhaps she shouldn't. There was something else in her bag. Antidepressants. On prescription. She hadn't told me. She knows I'd be angry. Overprescribing. It's all wrong. Just last week, I had a phone consultation with Thea Brooke. Her sister had finally persuaded her to call, worried about her low mood. Thea's got a lot on her plate. Casaubon's death, and I think she and Lattice Laura, I don't know. I said to her, what do you want? And she said, freedom. And I said, that's exactly what I'd prescribe you.
Okay. Go on, Rose.
That's exactly what I'd prescribe me, too. Freedom and quiet. I have to finish this paper. I have to convince the medical world that we're travelling on the wrong road. I was accused in the pub last night of advocating reflexology as a cure for cancer. No! My vision is of a personalised, holistic health plan available to everyone, rooted in hard science, in an understanding of the brain-body network. If we can find out which chemicals are important in affecting the brain and then influence these chemicals, we can design individualised programmes for patients. It will revolutionise our approach to healthcare. This isn't rhetoric. It's the truth. But the people I need have stopped listening. Bulstrode is still back in the new hospital in theory, but he's talking of leaving the town and he's unwell, distracted, hypochondriac. His digestion's shot and he isn't backing me. I swallowed my pride and asked if he might help me out with a little loan. But no, I shouldn't have asked. For Christ's sake, I'm trying to work.
Boss man, I have what you're having, mate. Cheers. 59 today. Don't look it, do I?
Or do I, rascal? Don't answer that.
Don't mum a ruddy face. That might give it away. Dr. Lydgate gave me something for that. Courtesy of Lord Bulstrode, or BS, as I like to call him. Watch this while I go to the Kazi. Sorry, mate, I know you're having a slash, but have you seen this poster? Stone Court Residential Home. You know it, yeah? Yeah, everyone around it does, right?
Yeah.
That place is more like a lab, Brooks, than a care home. Take it from me, I've been betting there for years.
See you, mate.
Have a good one, mate. From Bulstrode's Rat and Mouse. Yeah, you is bit on the side. Joking, you're too good for him, Tracy. Two Johnny Walkers, boss man. One for me and one for the lady. Main thing is, Trace, I'm Bulstrode's cleaner too. Cleaning up secrets makes more dividends than toilets, you know. Yes, yes, secrets are the investments that keep on giving. BS used to be an FX trader. FX, foreign exchange. We were the guys making billions, betting that there would be a financial crash and the government would bail us out. Yeah, I know, I'm a prick. But I was right, they did. And that's where I got half my BS on BS. But you see, I'm back because of Stone Court. That's the real gold mine. It all started when BS opened a group chat with some traders and brokers from other banks. The cartel, he called it. Traders from the biggest banks. In a chat colluding to fix market rates. Banking is buying and selling. Yeah, we make money in the margin. Something's only worth what people are willing to pay for it. We knew all the people selling and buying, so between us, we could make anything valuable or worthless. That is one of BS's favourite things, deciding what's valuable and what's worthless. Probably why he's so chummy with a big G.O.D., eh? Like mines! Anyway, long story short, we got caught. I took the rap. Ha! Joke is, that's not even a blackmail, Trace. Don't get me wrong, I'll try, but the banks won't even fire you for that. They'll just pay you off and cover it up to avoid embarrassment. One of the other cartel members is suing the bank for, get this, $100 billion. Maybe that's what I should press BS for, Trace. What do you think? You in? Oh. Yeah, sorry. It's not COVID. It's Cointreau and cocaine. Nothing some more whiskey won't fix. Boss man! I like you, Tracy. You remind me of my mum. She came over from Trinidad. Windrush! Trained nurse, but they didn't take her qualifications out here. She cleaned houses, day and night. I'm paying up me arse for lawyers now to keep her in the country, and I need to squeeze some more secret peas from the bank of BS. I know. I look too red to be from TT, yeah, but trust me, in the city, that's what you need. The nice, Caucasian vibe. water. I just need some water and a moment. I'm fine. When me and BS got our payout for breaking the law, we decided to go live the dream in the US, build our wives, that we never saw, the houses they'd always wanted. Well, Tracy, turns out we didn't like our wives and kids as much as we thought. I even went to AA for them, but I think sober, they liked me even less. Divorce, and she got the kids, of course, but I can't be as bad as BS. He fled the country with his missus, then she died. And he got all her money too. Made the mistake of bragging to me. His dead missus has been widowed before she met BS, and she had a daughter, Sarah, who cleared off long ago with a Jamaican guy. She should have got everything that BS's missus had owned, but BS kept quiet about her, didn't he? And this daughter, she had a son, Will Ladislaw. Is he as nice a kid as he looks? Yeah. He is. Mix, like me as well. It makes me want to shaft BS even more for the lad. Maybe that's one wrong I can right in my old age. I mean, I scared the shit out of Will in the dairy of Lidl's. He dropped his eggs. I knew it was him. He's the spit of his mum. Sarah Dunkirk, I asked. The fuck, you replied. Makes me want to step on BS's neck even harder. You don't deserve any of that money. Should have gone to Sarah. To Will. Time for another capsule cocktail. Bulstrode's guy, Lydgate, gave me 20 odd tablets for various ailments. Ugh. How they gonna try and send my mum home like they didn't ask her to come here in the first place? Like she's not lived here over 60 years. How they gonna let BS run a care home into the ground and not let my mum put her off her pension in peace? How is it you and me are cleaning up for BS? All these sods profiting off a system they fucked. Whatever. We're all sods. Tracy. What other choice did I have? It's eat or get eaten up there. In hindsight, Sarah Dunkirk and Will Ladislaw should have been the ones eating, but BS was the one with the cash flow, and that's what I needed. My lifestyle ain't cheap. One more, Tracy. Come on. Yes, Tracy! Two more, boss man! Oh. I'm fine. I'm just excited. This is the good bit. Actually, I wouldn't call it blackmail as such. I'd call it a passive investment, and I mean on paper, it's legal employment. Let me formally introduce myself, Tracy. I am the senior consultant to Stone Court Residential Home. No need to curtsy. I don't need no airs or graces. What I need is a raise. That's why I'm here. I got more ammo now. See? I'm a consultant, so I can talk to accounts. I can access all the paperwork and get this. When I did, what did I see? BS has been BSing, fluffing the PPE figures, saying he's buying 10 boxes, but he's buying one, saying it's top quality, but it's back of the lorry latex. So while he's wiggling his margins to maximise his profit, your nan's, well, you know, yeah, mine too. Toast to him, eh? To those who were lost in the margins. Walk on through the wind. Walk on through the rain. Though your dreams be tossed and blown. Walk on. Walk on with hope in your heart. And you'll never walk alone. You'll never walk alone. How'd you cancel someone? You know, anyone in the cancelling business? Rosie? Oh, YouTube, yeah, no, I know YouTube, not that old and drunk. Boss man, napkin, pen, whiskey. Rosanna Vinci. Well, she can use this information to cancel BS for me. Amen, you're a good accomplice, Tracy, yes. I'll go back to Lydgate for you, get another capsule cocktail en route to blackmail BS. You look relieved. Make the most of that. I heard one of the Eton lads chatting fraff. Apparently the government are going to pay for BS's BS by raising national insurance. National insurance, aka the dickhead tax. Unlike income tax, which goes up the more you earn, national insurance goes down. And get this, yeah? If you earn all your income from sitting on your arse all day and waiting for people like us to pay them rent, then you don't pay nada. And that is why I'm here, eh? To get our BS money back. Just call me the tax man. No, Tracy, I'm good. NI is not for your pensions or national security or parks or puppies, like they told you. It's your money going to the government. And you know what? I ain't against that. The NHS needs an extra X percent of someone's something. Billionaires saw a 22% increase in their wealth in this country over COVID. When was the last time your pay packet went up 22%? That's some real BS. I bet that's what he's making off that shoddy PPE, or what he stole from Will's inheritance. And why after you, beautiful, beautiful Tracy, have suffered after our loved ones have been cremated in empty churches, why is it that you, ordinary, hard-working, suffering you must pay when rich dicks like BS pay nothing? It's not a trick question. It's a trick situation. Because they are the billionaires and they ain't gonna tax themselves, are they? Now, I think we all need a drink after this one, don't we? Tracy. If I'm brown bread before BS gets cancelled, promise me you'll cancel him for me and get that pony to Will Ladislaw. About time Will was in someone's will. Hey! You think my kids are happy? They don't know ambition. They don't know joy. BS ain't happy, that's for true. He still shat himself when he saw me, though. Put on a face, you know. The middle classes, they love her face. Acted all nice and said his mate, Dr. Lydgate, could help me out because my body seems to be broke. And I said, that's not all that's broke, mate.
Yeah, no, Lydgate. Yeah, I'm going, Tracy.
What's that? Yeah, keep the change. Get Tracy whatever she wants or needs. I'm gonna go blackmail BS before I'm brown bread.
Today, the coroner returned a verdict of accidental death in the case of John Raffles. His funeral was paid for by Nicholas Bulstrode, CEO of Stonecourt Care Home. We tried to speak to Mr. Bulstrode, but he is currently unavailable for comment. His office did, however, offer their condolences to John Raffles' family and friends. In other news, local harvest festivals are well underway, but online.
Archaeologists digging on the route of a new high-speed railway have unearthed what they've described as an astounding set of Roman statues.
Unearthing statues described as rare, remarkable, incredible.
Hey, Celia, I just tried to call you. Can you ring me back? Oh, and say hi back to James for me and give a kiss to little Arthur. Speak to you soon. I have something the size of the world to tell Celia. Too big and too important to squeeze into a voice note. A year ago, when she told me she was pregnant, I was blindsided. When she gave me the news, James was in the other room. I didn't know what to say. I thought it wasn't polite to point out they'd only been together for 5 minutes. Plus, we'd only just got close again and I didn't want to annoy her. But then I looked at her face and even her eyes were grinning. And that made me smile. Seeing someone you love so happy. Congratulations, I said, Do you mean it? She asked, as if I'd ever say no. Yes, I do, I said truthfully. And 2 months ago, when I first realised my period was late, I didn't smile straight away either. I wasn't ready for this. Like Will and I, we'd had the chats. We'd lay in bed, sketching a future between us. Hypothetical babies, imaginary weddings. And I'd said, maybe none of that's for me. The expense, the 58.6 tons of carbon emitted each year. And he'd nodded and said, yeah, I can understand that. So when I took the test, and when those two blue lines appeared, I was shocked. Shocked at how I felt. In equal parts distressed and happy. I told Will the next day. He'd come in from work. He hadn't even taken his bag off. Oh, he said. Oh, I laughed. We talked about it for hours. It was still early days, we knew that, but we plotted out all the options. We talked about the world we would be bringing a child into. In our personal life, money was already tight. We just moved in together. We'd have to clear the junk room of boxes. Also, it had been a year of pain. I'm so glad I had Will to write to after Cass's death. Someone to talk to. A way to put words to paper so they existed somewhere else other than inside me. I'm so glad he stayed around until after the fog cleared. So glad we finally confessed our feelings for each other. Finally sending that letter and asking him to come to me. Oh, I felt like I was caught in a thunderstorm, scared and excited. And when he came to me, I was overwhelmed by this peace. Like, everything was where and as it should be. But it didn't change the fact, you know, I was still bruised for ages after Cass's death. Whilst we hadn't exactly got along at the end, I'd always believed in that manifesto. I assumed I'd take over, finish the work. But in his will, he'd written it couldn't be published posthumously, like he didn't trust me. Whereas Will was raw. Last year, when George Floyd was murdered by that police officer, I'd found him watching news footage, reading tweets, looking at articles, wide eyes glued to the screen. I had never seen him like that before. As the protests swept the US and the UK, I felt disgusted at the news, like the information, the reality. Disgusted that, if I was being honest with myself, I hadn't really thought about any of this before. Well, I knew racism existed, but I never thought properly about it and all the ways it manifests. I felt embarrassed and ashamed, and I wanted to look away, not to pretend that it wasn't happening. Just because I felt like I was helpless in the information, I could see how much it was hurting Will. I tried to peel the phone away from his gripped hands and he told me to leave it. I told him to stop looking at it. It was only going to make him feel worse. And the look he gave me, feel worse, he said. I'd got it wrong. I apologised. It's okay, he said. I asked him to tell me about it. Tell me what I could do. And he shook his head. Please, Thea, not now. That's not my job. It's hard to love someone with all your being, where every part of you wants to know them and share the world with them, and to reconcile that with the fact society is fundamentally built in a way that treats you differently, that we relate to the world differently, that I can never assume to know his experience of it. There's an expanse separating us. But I'm reading, I'm watching, I'm trying to learn. And I feel like there's still so much to do in this world, so much to fix. And now there might be a baby? So no, on paper it is not an easy decision. We talked around and around in hypotheticals till finally I asked Will, what do you really want? And he said, I'd love to have my own family and fill it with care. And I knew I wanted that too. I'm seeing a therapist now, once a week. I realised that after I left Uncle Arthur's, I tried to use Cass, the book, Protest, as a way of self-medicating. My brain is calmer now. I'm not living with Uncle Arthur trying to do what's expected of me, and I'm not following Cass anymore. I'm standing on my own two feet. And life with Will is generous. We share it, but we're independent. That's important. And therapy is my time, where I just get to talk and figure it all out. I look back and I look forwards. I'm just one part of the web. I'm looking into retaking my A-levels through evening classes. Again, the timing isn't ideal, but I'm going to do it at my own pace for me. I want to study environmental sciences. Oh. Hello? Hey! Yeah, where are you? Oh, great. Can I come over? No, no, nothing's wrong. I just want to talk to you. Yeah, okay. See you soon. Love you, Celia. Bye!
Done. I'll just make the next bus. We're doing the tree tonight. God knows if Boris is about to ban Christmas. Looks like he might not. But anyway, there's only me and Azabike and my mum in bed. No parties for me. I tell you, I've been dancing with this mop today. Good job Mr. Brooks out. He'd have had me locked up. I am so thrilled that Thea and Will have got together. As long as I get a few Christmas bonuses from customers and the boiler doesn't pack up, I've worked out by next summer I'll have paid off my loan. I transferred it to the bank and they gave me much better terms. I will have earned every penny myself, unlike some. Oh, I'm not a gossiper, I'm really not, but bloody hell, there's scandal round this way. Mr. Brooke is full of it. When I got here last week, he wasn't bothered about me cleaning. He just wanted to talk about poor Dr. Lydgate, who had nothing to do with that John Raffles death, I'm sure. But Mr. Brooks says people reckon Bulstrode paid Dr. Lydgate to get rid of John Raffles. Oh, I think that's rubbish. When John Raffles told me what Bulstrode had done, he knew Bulstrode's money wasn't his to spend. Should have gone to Will Ladislaw. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Bulstrode... Oh. Anyway, Raffles is dead. Alcohol poisoning. It was probably always on the cards, but what a sad way to go. He was dodgy as hell, but I sort of liked the guy. And then today, I get a text from Rosie. She's had me back clean in the past few weeks, but she says she needs to see me. Something important to talk to me about.
What I want to say to Celia is that it felt like no one was hearing me. And then I met Cass.
I said to her, "What do you want?" And she said, "Freedom. That's exactly what I prescribe you. It's exactly what I prescribe me too."
My nanny always goes on about compromise. She says, "Marriage isn't easy, Betta. It's all about giving
big
and taking."
Big clap of thunder or a flash of lightning. No defining moment. No big declaration.
Whatever twist did I have? It's eat or get eaten up.
We seem to be as in love with each other as we were on the first day our eyes locked
it's
in
mutual
longing.
It's hard to love someone
longing
with all your being, where every part of you wants to know them and share the world with them.
Can't know in advance, can you? I will all join up. 6 degrees of separation.
You can't live in the past, right? Got to move on. Look forward.
It's September 2023, and I'm doing Azabiki's favourite tea, pizza, chips and beans. And he doesn't know this, but I've made a chocolate cake for afters. I'm still working as a cleaner, but plenty else has changed. Every ending's a beginning, I always say. And who wouldn't want to know what's become of those youngsters who are such a part of my life? Well, Susie's daughter, Mary Garth, she's happily married with her Frieda, and they're living in a nice flat in Cowden. They found a donor, and Mary's had a baby girl. Oh, the proper co-parenting. And somehow or other, Mary's also managed to be writing a book for kids, and it's going to be published. Charlie Fairbrother's still on his own. No doubt still carrying a torch for Mary, but he has put the lid on his gambling. No one knows what's become of Nick Bulstrode. He sold off a lot of his properties in town and he seems to have disappeared. And Mrs. Cadwallader, she set up Bina's wedding service and she's raking it in. Dr. Lydgate and Rosie are still together, against the odds if you ask me. They moved to London. Rosie had always wanted to live there, but I think Dr. Lydgate's struggling. Thea went to visit and she says he's rich these days, but he's sad. And his hair's going grey, aged 31. She says he feels like a failure because his hospital never got built and all that research he was doing, it wasn't taken seriously. He's sold out, he's working in private practice. Rosie's still spending, but she's happy enough and gives piano lessons. Oh, that day she called me, about 2 years ago. I thought they were getting divorced, but it was to tell me she'd been pulling a few strings for Azubiki, finding out where to go next with his music lessons. She was such a help, got him a better teacher, and guess what? He's just won a scholarship to study in Manchester. Thea's nearly as thrilled as me. And tonight, when Azubiki's gone out with his friends, I'm taking a bottle of wine round to her and Will's. There's a lot to celebrate. Will's become a Green MP, and best of all, they've had a baby, Andrzej. It's like Andrew, but harder to say. Thea says it's Polish. And his middle name is Kai, after Will's Jamaican dad. Lovely. Oh, my Dorothea Brooke. She's still involved in climate stuff, goes on the marches with the pram. Probably won't make a name for herself, but she has such an effect on those around her. She's special, that one, in a hidden kind of way. Unlike my special boy. Listen to him.
For Birmingham, though, to be quite honest. 4 years.
I remember the trams, because I was only young then, when we used to have them, and they used to clink along and sometimes they'd come off the rail. Especially on Gumby.
Dorothea was played by Ellie Turner, Lydgate by Henry Lloyd Hughes, Tracy by Julia Roundthwaite, Mrs. Cadwallader by Mira Sayal, Mary Garth by Sinead Matthews, Will Ladislaw by Calvin Denver, Rosanna Vincey by Sharon Fool, and John Raffles by Ashley Gerlach. Middlemarch Monologues were written by Leanne Allen, Amanda Dalton, Tanika Gupta, Sabia Mank, Liz Mitten, Ellis Stevens, and Debree Stevenson. Original music was by Ellie Gowers. Sound design was by Eloise Whitmore. They were directed by Polly Thomas and Anastasia O.C. Kafour. Middlemarch Monologues are a collaboration between BBC Radio 3 and Warwick Arts Centre. They were a Naked production for BBC Radio 3.
And there are now dozens of plays from Shakespeare to contemporary stage hits, all from Drama on 3, available on the BBC Sounds app.
Somebody knows something. You can't hide a secret like this.
Gang rivalries, kidnapping, fraud.
No exaggeration, these people were the original Sopranos.
Oh, he knew he was a bad boy.
Uncover a darker side of life with Gangster, Fairy Meadow and Fake Psychic.
You know that old saying, confession's good for the soul.
Listen to true crime podcasts on BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 3, it's 9:30 and time now for more music from the best new classical releases. Here's Hannah French.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to Record Review Extra. Let's start small this evening with Scriabin. Andrei Gugnin playing a mazurka by Alexander Scriabin from his new album on Hyperion, featuring no fewer than 23 of them, a showcase of just how clearly Scriabin responded to and developed the passionate miniature form. Well, from the miniature to the very, very big, Bruckner's Ninth Symphony is providing the bulk of our programme tonight. We've got reviewer William Mivels building a library recommended recording of that mighty work coming up in just a few minutes. But before then, time to hear something from one of a selection of new Baroque releases that Suzanne Aspden reviewed on yesterday's show, the Dresden Vespers of Johann David Heineken. They're recorded here for the first time ever by Ensemble Polyharmonique and the Wrocław Baroque Orchestra, a team that really impressed Suzanne with their crisp and stylish interpretation of this